The Endurance Asia Podcast.
Yo, pick your red up cause things ain't that bad. Maybe you should switch the target that you're aiming at. Believe perfection is a beast that they'll never catch. So never waste another day because life moves so fast. And a dream without pursuing, yo, they never last. Another shadow of regret I try to never cast. And always tell a truthful story if they ever ask. Stop the complaining because things ain't that bad.
Welcome to episode 83 of the Endurance Asia Podcast. And this week we are covering the Backyard Ultra, the Team World Championships, which has been going on over the past week. And we catch up with Ned Phillips, the winner of the Singapore edition. But we caught up on Tuesday and there was still a lot of running to go, a hell of a lot of running. And what an unbelievable performance from the Belgium team, who managed to put in a world record of 110 yards. Gosh, I'm trying to do the maths in that with that at the top of my head. So it's like over 700K. Just what a performance from this group of runners that have come back again with Geertz and Steyaert, who put in the previous world record when they were the first to exceed 100 yards, and both finished together. No one DNF'd on that occasion. And this year, 2 years later, after their record being surpassed by Harvey Lewis in the actual World Championships in Big's backyard, they come back in Belgium and they have a third assist. Geelin, who takes them to 110 yards in total. And once again, they all finish together. None of them DNF. Like, it's a legendary story for them to do it once again. Just the sheer epic performance. I mean, it's back in the sort of Bannister 4 minute mile of like, can this be done? Like, what are the limits of human endurance? What can people actually achieve? And it just keeps on getting surpassed year after year after year with Backyard Ultra. Such a tough, tough type of race. And every hour on the hour, running 6.7 kilometer. The Team World Champs is a really interesting format in terms of you had around 60 countries that were competing against each other. Obviously all different courses, but also different climates. And so it's really hard to compare them all. But I think you can only in these scenarios compete with the people or run with the people. You're both competing and you're running with, as a team, the people around you. And once again, Belgium just absolutely smashed it. And similarly, the top three are the same for both years, with Belgium winning, then Australia coming second, followed by USA. Gore in Australia got to 96 laps, and Snell in the US getting to 88. And that was your top three. Massive call out to the Last Samurai Standing, Tomokazu Ihara, my coach, who will be coming back on the podcast again soon, was race directing again this year. And the Japanese team put in an absolutely heroic performance with 92 yards being the winning run. And so many great performances across the Japan team. Also worth calling out, there was a female record that was achieved as well, with Megan Eckhart in the US logging 87 yards, beating the prior record of 74 yards. And this is a record that's been held by incredible runners like Courtney DeWater. She held the record with 68, and Maggie Guttrell before that, who held the prior record. I think it was around 60 when she had an assist from our very own Asia-based Will Haywood, another Backyard Ultra running legend. Fantastic follow over the last few days. We also had Trung, who's an epic runner that could potentially have run for Singapore. He's got a Singaporean passport, but he's based in Vietnam right now and was born in Vietnam. And he has got back off running tour not that long ago. He loves the long epic stuff. And he won the Vietnam race, I think 39 laps he managed to lodge. So he will also be available to go to the actual world champs. So the format is there's a team world champs every 2 years, and then in between that they have the actual world champs on the odd year in Laz's backyard, the actual Biggs backyard ultra, which last year we saw Joseph Toe going from Singapore going put in an epic performance of 71 yards. So with that, let's hear from Ned Phillips, who represented Singapore and has been a stalwart from both the ultra running community, but also like has really sort of taken the backyard format to heart and is the kind of person in his like mid to late 50s who is just absolutely crushing it in this discipline, and shows that it's not just, you don't have to be young, you don't have to be super fast, you don't have to be, but you have to be dedicated and you have to have the mental fortitude and you have to be fit. He's in incredible shape at the moment. So with that, let's hear from Mr. Ned Phillips.
Tell the truthful story if they ever ask. Stop the complaining because things ain't that bad.
Ned Phillips, welcome back on to the Endurance Asia podcast, sir. We are, it's Tuesday evening right now. We've had a crazy weekend of Backyard Ultra. You are the champion for Singapore, and we've got a lot of people in the world still going. I mean, I'd like to think if you had an assist, you'd still be going now, right now as well. But how's it going, mate? How are you feeling after this weekend's exploits and in the Beach Backyard Ultra in Singapore?
Well, first of all, mate, thank you for having me on. You've always been a fan and a supporter. I appreciate it. And I think people know Backyard is my love. I've been in endurance a while. I did adventure racing, then Ironman, but it's Backyard now. I adore it. So, yeah, you know, we'll talk about the race there. I feel, man, and we'll talk about this because you talk about strategy and nutrition. I feel great, man. Like, I feel really good. Obviously, so many people said to me after the race, congratulations. And then they said, you're going to meet Laz. They know I'm such a fanboy that they knew that I was most excited about meeting Laz. So I think a combination of everything. And you are right. I just checked. Are you ready for this? We're on lap 73 and Belgium still have eight runners.
Eight runners. US had eight runners as well. Yes. Have they just dropped one? But yeah, I think they've got a similar. And the Japanese have had an incredible run as well. So the Japanese Laz, my coach Tomokazu Ihara is the race director for it, and they've still got four runners going, and they're in fourth spot. Australia in third, but Belgium, USA, eight runners for Belgium, seven runners for USA, and who knows how they're going to how long they're going to be on for.
I think in Belgium they hadn't lost a runner up to something like loop 40 or something. Unbelievable. Backyard, yeah, is great.
It's a crazy sport, isn't it? And because I consider it as a sport unto itself. It's very different. I mean, there's so many different types of endurance sport, of ultra running, trail running. I mean, when you think about, you've got like the UTMB style, and then you've got the Golden Race, Golden Trail Series, and there's so many different distances, and then you've got like the world champs that go on, and there's just many different sort of types of terrain and distances. I think Backyard is completely in its own zone, isn't it? An own sport.
You know, we talk about ultra having everything from six-day racing in 1880 in New York, when that was a thing, all the way 24-hour track, UTMB, which is huge today. Backyard, I agree. I think it's its own world. And when I see new people try it afterwards, they're like, holy shit, that was weird. So yeah. It is, and
it's a crazy sport that you just seem absolutely sort of like a perfect both stage of your endurance career and kind of mentality. And so let's talk about where you first got into it, Ned, because I remember the first time we had you on the podcast was in 2020, middle of well, middle of pandemic, it was like October 2020. It was 4 years ago for this World Champs, and you, it was the Singapore team were, and you were, that was the first time. And we had a few of you on the podcast that were all about to run it. But you had a, I think COVID was where it really kicked off, when the virtual runs. And so you did a treadmill run as part of it. Well, did you do a treadmill, or did you run outside and then get back to a Zoom call every after every lap? I forget what one you did.
I did a treadmill in my bedroom COVID. And you think about those classic stuff. I got into it. So I've been following the Barclays since the beginning. You know, so I've been a Laz fan before. Remember, I'm sure.
Were you introduced at the race that eats its young? Was that
way
you, before that?
Way. You know, look, as you know, Scott, I'm 57. So I've been, I did my first ultra actually as a 17-year-old. I did a 24-hour hike in the hills, dropped it for a while. And then when I got to Hong Kong, when I was 30, maybe even before 28, I did Macalhouse Trail. And I did it with a couple of guys who were like, oh, we should do this trail. And without knowing, we came third overall. And it was back when we did 1650, and that got us third. Today, it wouldn't get you 30th, right? So, you know, it was pretty weak. And then I started doing Ironman, got into it. I think your point about stage, you know, backyard, it's not for everybody. Like, this is a, you know, you're not seeing beautiful hills, you're not seeing trail, and it is a very particular thing. But I think it just came to me. I did Ironman, I've done a lot of stuff. Being a Laz fan from back in the day, I don't, you know, my navigation is terrible, Scott, so I'm not doing Barclay. Like, I'm not navigating Barclay.
You said you're an adventure racer though. You must have a bit of nav from your adventure racing days. Or did you have a good navigator in your team when you raced? Yeah.
We joked in our little team. We had no real good navigator. We actually joked, but we knew a guy and they were the same pace. So we just followed his team.
Yeah, fair enough.
So we followed. But then I think, you know, when I saw Backyard start to grow, had followed Dave Proctor, Johan Steen, some of the early guys in there. And when it came to that bedroom run, I was so frustrated during COVID. I remember in Singapore, we weren't meant to run 2K from our house. I was like, man, like, this is so cool. And we were on a Zoom call, 1,000 of us, I don't remember how many there were. And I came like 40th or something. And we got down to two Zoom screens of the 25 runners on one screen.
I remember following it. It was crazy, man. Yeah.
It was crazy. And they had, so one of the Canadian guys knew this rap star. Oh my God, I forgot his name. I remember it. Not super famous, but pretty famous. And he came on and was like rapping to us while I was on my treadmill in my bedroom. And I'm like, this is as weird as anything. I like this. So
who won that one in the end? Was it David Proctor? Was it Proctor that won it? I forget who was actually.
No, the first one. Well, actually.
Because there was two. Yeah.
There was two. The very first one. Do you remember the controversy? So it was a European guy versus, I think, an American guy. And what happened was they're both on Zoom. The European guy got a delay on the bell, right? So he was watching it on Zoom. Now, obviously we all know the time because we're all connected digitally clock, but he was following the bell on Zoom and his, his screen froze. So he started 20 seconds late on loop like 68. And if you remember, it was the Canadian guys organizing it and they had to disqualify him. They phoned Laz live and said, what do we do? Because it wasn't his fault. Yeah. And the Canadian race director, oh my God, you remind me of this, Scott, phoned him and said, look, I'm so sorry, we have to disqualify you. He's like, no, I'm still going. He said, yeah, you started 20 seconds late. He said, no, I heard the bell. He said, yeah, the bell was delayed. And the Canadian race director was crying as he was telling him in his bedroom he had to stop running.
Yeah, and well, it's come a long way from there, right? So I think the first, so 2020, so the year after, so it would have been the same year, but it would have, but it was the first like outdoor, and that was the first time they had the concept of every country competing as a team.
It was the COVID that created the team dynamic.
Yeah, and how did you get on that first year in 2020?
I did 22. So in my bedroom, I did 21.
Yeah.
Now to show backyard truly is mental. When I got outside and did it, I did 22. You know, you've got to believe that something in my brain just wanted to get more than 21. I got 20. So Scott, here's a funny thing. When I did 22 loops that year, Abby won, with 35 loops. Hong Wei came second with 34. This shows what a backyard nerd I am. Jasmine Go got 29. Ben Sui and Natalie, I think, both got 24.
And then Alex was in there as well. I think Alex must have been just behind you as well.
Just behind. And I think, I think I came fifth. Then next time, 2 years ago at Paso Riz, I came third because on the last loop, on the 29th loop, four of us went out, me, Chris Timms, Derek, and Joshua. Chris, I'll never forget it, because we know Chris is a legend. He goes into the bathroom, which I thought was for a toilet break. Turns out he went in there to stretch because there was someone to stretch. I don't really know. And he turned around. I'm like, oh my God, if I finish this loop, I'm going to be third. I was so stoked. And of course, I got third. And Joshua and Derek went on to put an epic battle. But I'll tell you.
Yeah, I mean, they finished on like 36 or something.
No, 51.
No, 54. Like, yeah. 51? We had him on the podcast after as well. Of course,
that's
it was 51.
Right.
It was epic.
You went to Red Dot. But you know, Scott, a little thing in my brain said, hold on, I came fifth the first time. I came third the second time. If we follow this geometric pattern, fifth, third, what's next? So in my delusional brain, I'm like, oh, I'm meant to win this time. I didn't think I would, but I was meant to.
Well, I mean, this is what I love coming into this, is that you've been so adamant that, okay, this is your A race. This is what you're focused on, and this is what you want to win. And I'm sure you had the goal of actually winning it so you could actually go out and hang out with a few of your heroes. I mean, I'm looking at Harvey Lewis is still going around the track in the US right now. Like, you'd be loving to rub shoulders with him at the next opportunity when they have the proper big spat bud. But was that the goal going into it this year, to actually be able to head to the US for the for the actual champs?
Of course. I mean, I'm sometimes a master in self-delusion. I tell myself I can, even though it's not rational. If we look at, when I look, Joshua Toe, he did 51, right? And then he went to Binks and did 72.
72 is just crazy. Like, I mean, it also goes to show that doing it in Singapore, I mean, 52 is crazy, and the heat in Singapore and just staying out for over 2 days, but actually being in slightly cooler climbs, even though there's a more technical course and with more elevation in there, I think it's slightly easier in the cooler weather,
I think so. So was my goal to win? I mean, Scott, I think you have to go to backyard to want to win. You have to.
Yeah.
You have to. And I looked, Hong Wei was there. There was me. There was Joshua. And there were some unknowns. A guy called Frank Feng, who very strong.
Frank's been killing it recently. He's, I mean, he won the SG, the Craze Ultra just recently, 100K Craze Ultra. I see him out on the trails every day, and he's just slow and consistent. I thought he would be perfect for this. But I think also he's got a race coming up this coming weekend. So I think he had just planned to do 24 kind of when he went out. And
he did. And also like Zoe Wong, who is fantastic. So, but obviously going in, I'm like, okay. And we'll talk about strategy, because it completely changed my strategy. To your point, Scott, I haven't raced since Backyard 2022. This is my only, I haven't raced in 2 years. This is it.
Only thing you've been working towards.
It's not just my A race. This was my only race.
Yeah. And you know what? That just changed perception, and that just changes everything that you do around your training around it. Like, I've seen you out in the trails a couple of times on a Saturday, and you see you on every Saturday, you get in like your good 60K long run, or around that kind of amount, and just the pacing similar to what you would want to do at a backyard ultra, and just like gutting it out in the middle of the day in the heat.
I think it really has been, you know, look, given life, you know, we're none of us professional at this, we've all got life going on as well. So, you know, some people ask, oh, did you do all the training you could? Of course not, because, you know, if you just trained, you would do way more. But, you know, given life, I've run 3,000K this year before Backyard, which is not a huge amount, but, you know, in 9 months, 3,000K, it's not huge. Averaging just under 300K a month, it's not huge, but it's not bad. I did 26 runs more than a marathon this year. So I did 26 runs over 50K. And the one I think that really got me in the spirit, I think, you know, I did a 100K run to park run, then a 100-mile run to park run.
Yeah, I saw those two. They're incredible.
I gave myself 24 hours. I set off at 7:30 a.m. Friday from park run, where it starts. Yeah. And the real thing with that was, look, it was not a race. No one cares. No one's out there. I had to keep it on. And I tell you, Scott, so 9 minutes per K is 100 miles in 24 hours. That is backyard pace. Now, it's very slow, but of course, you stop to buy drinks, you stop to buy all of it. That's part of it. Scott, at hour 15 on my 100 mile to get back, my watch told me I was averaging 8:58 with all the stops. And I'm like, man, I've got like another 9 hours to go. Like, what? And I fought the watch because every second I can drag off 8:58 and I fought it down to 8:57. I fought it down because, you know, I go into 7-Eleven to buy a drink. And if there was two people queuing in the garage, I have to wait for them. Clock's ticking, you know, and I remember standing in one garage and my watch went from 8:57 to 8:58. I'm like, dudes, come on. Anyway, for both of those, I made it back with five to spare. And I think my training had just really been dialed. But we're going to talk about nutrition and pace, which I actually think got me there. But you're right, Scott. I mean, I bumped into you. I saw you on the roads. I was doing it all for this race.
Yeah, and you're looking good. You've looked like you've lost a lot of weight. I saw you and thought, oh God, let Ned's peaking at the right time coming into the Beach Backyard Ultra. And so going into it, I mean, there's a few. The concept of the race, I've got to be honest, it's not my favorite type of race.
Like I know, you told me.
I've done Everesting on a bike. I've done Everesting on foot. I've also done the going up and over Booker Tima, Booker Tima challenge.
Well, hold on, Scott.
Mountain Goat Challenge, yeah.
You not only did it, you won it.
I did win it. Yeah, I did win it. And that's a tough race. But the thing is, you know when that's ending. I know you've just got to do as many loops as you can in 12 hours. So you can also, I mean, there is a pacing thing to it, but you can just, you know that you get to finish in 12 hours. The concept of going, and it's a beautiful, Pasir Ris Park is beautiful, but it's just a kind of flat park and look out to the ocean. It gets pretty mundane and boring. It's not like you're in the mountains and you've got beautiful views. And you just never know when you're going to finish. And so that concept of it just blows my mind. So how much? Then when you go into it, it's like, how much food do I need to pack? Like, I need support. I'm not going to have someone to sit and support me for like potentially 3 days. And then what pacing do I do? And so like going into it, and obviously you're a bit of a veteran now in many ways, Ned. Don't want to call out your age too much, but when it comes to backyard, what was your plan going into it?
Well, Scott, I nailed it this time, man. I figured it out. So two things happened. Number one, we very luckily, as you know, I have a little podcast. We had Sam Harvey on. Do you know who Sam Harvey is?
I do, yeah.
He's the backyard legend out of New Zealand. Still running right now as we speak.
He is, Sam, yeah. He's going strong. There's just two of them left. He's got one assist left with him, but he's still
correct.
Going strong.
So he's been over 100. He was on our show, and I talked to him. And he's a backyard coach. I didn't get him as a coach, but I was talking about backyard. So I normally run 50 minutes, 49.50. 49 or 50 minutes, right? And he said to me, Ned, in the heat, you should be running 54. Why? Now, I combined Sam Harvey's advice with, you guys know David Roche just broke the Leadfield course record.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Incredible. And low volume of running as well, right?
Which I was agreeing. Do you know how many calories he was taking an hour?
Yeah, he's got this whole like high carbohydrate diet, right? How many, what was he doing? Like 200 grams of carbs an hour? Or
no,
like,
he was doing 500 calories.
Yeah,
that's five gels an hour and 125 grams of carbs, right?
125 grams of carbs.
He trained himself to do it. So I read that and I'm like, I have a good, he said, I may not be the most talented runner, but I have the most talented gut. I can take in more. So for historians of running, you'll know who Matt Carpenter is. Matt Carpenter holds Pike's Peak record and some of the great records. He said Matt Carpenter's records from the 90s still stands for Leadville. He said he's a more talented runner, but David Roche said, I'm a more talented eater.
Eater, yeah. I mean, they talk about UTMB as like an eating contest as well. Like a lot of these 100-mile races, just can you get enough calories in to sustain the pace for the full amount of time?
I read that. And what he said is, and it's true, you need your heartbeat low to consume calories, right? So I've normally run 49, 50 minutes.
Is that true? So you actually, if your heart rate's high, you cannot actually consume food, or you can't actually
consuming food takes heart rate.
But digest.
Yes. So So I normally was 137. I told myself, and I'm not that analytical, but I was like, okay, I am going to keep it up. Low, Scott, you ready for this, man? I told myself I'm going to run 54 minutes per loop. So I was last, Scott, at the backyard holder this weekend, I was last on every single loop, stone cold last, until the last one where I won.
Yeah, that's incredible. Like that is like incredible pacing. That's how it should be. It's not how you start; it's how you finish. Right?
And I told myself 54. When I look at the spreadsheet for backyard, if it's a bit detailed for you to look now, if you go look and you find my name on it, you'll see an average time for my laps. My average time for my laps was 53 minutes 56 seconds. So I nailed it. You ready for this? I was shooting for a low heart rate of 124. My average heart rate was 120. My heart rate never went above 129 the whole time. Ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Not once.
Man, this is crazy. I actually, it's the first thing I did when I looked at your, Strava, I went straight in. I'm like, what was his average heart rate in there? Because I was thinking you just have to keep almost zone one to be able to sustain it for that amount of time.
And every loop, I had two Leica gels. That's my tiny plug for Leica. I had two Leica gels, two tailwind. That's 100 grams of carbs and 400 calories. And I had 1,000 milligrams of salt. So in tailwind, there's 600.
Yes.
And I had a support guy, a young guy called Darren Lee, who's a great friend of mine, who's not an ultra runner, but he's a bodybuilder. So he's like, you tell me what to put in, I'll just give it to you every time. Honestly, and I'm just going to say this, man. I was dialed. Like, I felt solid the whole way. And so many of the runners were like, you just look so consistent. I came in and Jerry was like, you're just going to keep doing this? I'm like, yes, I'm just going to keep doing this.
So the 54 minutes, the challenge with that is, yeah, it gives you, you've got time when you get in to rest a little bit, eat, but you can't really get a sleep in or a power nap. And Grant, you actually didn't really need to like probably sleep in the. But I mean, if you'd have had to do a full another night as well, I think you would have like had to get some power naps in. Would you have like sped up on a couple of ones just to be able to like get a 10-minute nap, or how were you going to think about it in that way?
I must admit, so I've been up to 48 hours, 50 hours without sleep before, and it's okay. Do I think in Singapore I can get above 48? I think it's unlikely. So for Singapore, I didn't plan for it. I'm pretty good without sleep. Look, I mean, we'll get on to Biggs in a minute, but I must admit, as we were coming towards the last loop and it was me, Joshua, and Zoe had done amazing. I think the one advantage I had, this is my fifth backyard, and you ready for this? Scott, I've done 125 loops in training myself just from my house. So I have gone out and run 12 loops at a time, 10 loops at a time, 8 loops at a time with everything set up. I'm now over 200. Well, actually with this one, I'm on about 225 backyard loops I've done. So, I mean, I'm dialed on this. And, you know, if let's face this, if this was a trail race for those 15 people, I would be almost last. Frank would beat me, Joshua would, they would all be this. And on the other side of it, Joshua's clearly the king. Like he's the best. But I'm probably the next most experienced guy in backyard. And I think backyard is a different sport, Scott. And I think, so when I looked at Frank, he's amazing, but he was running 44 minute loops.
Yeah, it's way too fast.
I don't think he should be running 44 minute loops. I just don't. And look, nothing against Frank. He's awesome. It was fantastic. He did great. He's amazing. But I've realized if your heartbeat's up that high, you can't consume. And if you want to go far. So I think Scott, it's a combination of me being 57, it's 30 years of ultra. It is the realization that I've lost my ego. I don't care coming last every lap. And a combination of all those things. And look, Joshua, I think, got injured towards the end.
I was wondering what happened, because obviously, because Joshua was probably running, he was running like 45 fairly fast laps as well, I thought.
He was running with Zoe, 49 or 50. He was running. Yeah. I did on loop 10 or so. I think he had a bit of a tweak or an injury, but I must admit, Scott, on loop 25, and I could see Zoe was kind of done. I actually saw her stop and she kind of turned back towards me once and then carried on walking. I thought, okay, she might do one more loop. And I came in loop 25 and I'm like, all right, here we go. This is the battle with Joshua. This is, you know, even for me, Scott, to be an assist, you know how much I love backyard, even to be an assist, I'm like, oh my God. But I try to tell myself, and I told my, you know, Darren, my crew, One lap. Scott, I had no music. Scott, didn't touch my phone. No music, nothing else. When you say backyard's boring, man, I think it is the opposite. Like, I just looked at the pavement. Are you getting your calories in, Ned? Are you calm? Are you running? So I ran, Scott, 8 minutes per K, super slow. I had 5 30-second walks at exact spots. I came in, if you look at my loops, this might be too much detail for the viewers, 54 minutes every loop, except two where I did 57, where I had to pop into the bathroom to get rid of a little, to get rid of a little load. But apart from that, just don't think, And every time it came into my head, you know, five people have dropped out, another five, maybe I can win. No, Ned, stop, just focus. And that,
yeah,
that was it.
It's an interesting dynamic as well, because obviously you're a team all representing Singapore. You all want to be able to deliver as many laps as you could, as you can for Singapore as a nation. Obviously, it's always going to be quite challenged in Singapore because of the heat here. I think it's you know, really a big handicap compared to most other countries that are doing it at cooler climates this time of year. Albeit like Mexico, there's still three people going strong there. It will be boiling, and apparently that course there for the Mexico one is really technical and lots of elevation, and they always manage to like put in a great performance. But I think generally across all the countries, apart from Vietnam, we'll touch on that because my mate Trung just won that as well.
Oh, wow.
With 38 laps. Yeah. You must know Trung. He's actually Singaporean as well.
I know of him. I don't know him personally.
Yeah. Well, he's Singaporean. He's like got a Singaporean passport, but he's Vietnamese. And so he could have done it in either country effectively. But I think he saw that Joshua was doing the Singapore one. And he's like, no, I don't fancy doing 750 laps. Although I think you'd have given him a good run for his money. But yes, I think that definitely plays into it. But yeah, when I was expecting Joshua at least to put in a kind of performance of last year, and seeing the video of the two of you come, and you've got the concept of, look, you all want to do it for Singapore, but then you're also competing with everyone as well. But yeah, did you really want to? Because I also think part of you must be quite disappointed that you only got to put in 26 laps. I almost feel like you would have liked to have gone through a second night just to show that you can. And so what was the feeling of like when Joshua, because it seemed like you were sort of, are you sure? But you didn't also go, no, come on, you have to run again. Because I think there was part of you like, well, if you don't go, then that's me. Well, I've gone over the 24, so I've got a place in bigs. But I'm interested how what was going through your mindset at the time.
Well, you know me well, my friend. You know me well. Look, if I could have my ideal outcome, me and Joshua would have battled until the next night and I would have won, or he would have won. I mean, I love Joshua to pieces. I adore the dude. Would I have wished to put up a 40 loop? We don't know, Scott, because as you know, in an ultra, you can feel good and then 10 minutes later, you can feel terrible, right? But on that last loop, look, if you see on my Strava, the heartbeat was the same, nothing changed, right? Nothing changed. I had it dialed, and of course, couldn't go on forever. Is a bit of me disappointed that I could not go as deep? As Laz said, the only loser at backyard is the winner, because they don't find their limit. So do I wish it could have gone further? Yes. But on the same token, so on loop 25, I could see Zoe was kind of done. I'm like, okay, let's do this. You know, I was super zen. Let's do this. And I remember thinking, you just have to keep doing what you're doing. Joshua will do what he does. You do what you do. Let's just do what you do here. And my crew, Darren, being a bodybuilder, younger dude, he was fascinated by all of this world, but he's a very disciplined guy. He's like, so funny. Because I told him 400 calories. Don't let me.
Did he crew you for the entire 26? Incredible.
He was down for all 48. Like, if we were...
Oh, mate, what a dude. Well, I've actually been meaning to do a podcast, and we're lining up of just of interviewing crew. Because there's just not enough said of, like, the amount that crew put into it, and completely selflessly. I mean, they do get the part of the, like, oxytocin and dopamine of seeing people perform and do well. But they're just doing it for the love. And so kudos to him.
No, and he was like, look, I'm going to be into this. So loop 25, I come in, I sit down, and I said to Darren, right, that's just one loop. Oh, I have to tell you my shirt strategy. You're going to love this, dude. You're going to love this.
You've got your old rabbit shirts.
Well, no, but yes, I have, but even more so, I had a special one. But I'll tell you about that in a minute. So we get into the corral for loop 26, and they're helping Zoe up. Zoe could barely walk, and they're like carrying her to the corral. And I was like, Zoe? Like, there's no way she could run. I was like, what are you doing, Zoe? And then the bell goes, and Zoe kind of hugs me a bit, and Joshua was like, go. And I'm like, what? They're like, go. I'm like, no. And I did say, I said to him, aren't you coming? And you're right, could I have dragged him down the course? Possibly. But I said to him, aren't you coming? He's like, no. And he said, I'm done. No, his exact words was, I've had enough. Now, I think he had been injured. I don't think he'd have enough mentally. Joshua is a superstar mentally. And I remember, oh man, like, and so I hugged him once, and I said, really? And he said, you deserve this, go. And I hugged him again, and I tell you what, Scott, I turned around and I kind of burst into a few tears, because I was like, oh man, like I'm gonna win this. And there was a really nice photo. So I'm doing a photo of like my head in my hands. I had a few tears of like really, because I knew I was gonna finish that loop. And would I have relished the battle? Of course, right? But you know, this as Laz says, this is backyard. Anything happens, right? This is backyard. And of course, like I'll take, you know, I'll 100% take it. Joshua said afterwards, because look, I'll say it. I kind of said to Joshua, did you not? Because I'll just say this, Scott, like, you know, obviously everyone knows me in Singapore. Not everyone knows me, but anybody in the ultra community knows me just as the backyard guy, right? They know I don't go to UTMB. They know I don't go to VMM, not exactly, you know? And I think there was this little sense that, oh, it would be pretty nice if Ned wins, you know? And I was hoping Joshua didn't go, okay, you can win. And I talked to him, he said, look, he had an injury. He had it from early on. He was done. He's actually going off to do Dead Cow Gully. Dead Cow Gully next year is a backyard race where, you ready for this, Scott? Five of the entrants have done 100.
Okay.
Harvey Lewis, Sam Harvey, Phil Gore, and the two Belgians are going. Can you imagine going to a backyard race where you know five people have done 100?
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy, isn't it? And look, talking about going to a race where five people have done 100, this now qualifies you to go to Biggs in Laz's backyard, which is where this all originated. What date is it next year? So you have the World Champs, and then the following year they have the on-site championship for each winner from each country. Does it work with a winner and assist from some of the top countries, or no, it's just the winner from each country? That's pretty harsh on like Belgium, USA, Australia, where you've got people that have now already done over 70 yards. Yeah,
but okay, so to your, I mean, to be able to go to Laz, everyone knows I'm the biggest Laz fanboy, to be able to go. Because again, I'm not going to do Barclay. I don't know how to enter. I can't navigate. I'm not doing Barclay. To be able to go to Laz's backyard, the actual backyard, meet the man himself, and also, as you say, Harvey Lewis, Phil Gore, the Belgian dudes, all of these guys. And Scott, there's also an at-large list. So about 20 or 30, I think he's going to have, normally it's 75 people. I think he'll make it 100 because there's 63 nations, and about 20 or 30 people will call the at-large who've done the most. But you know what? So did you ask me, was I a little sad I couldn't show a bit more of what I had? I am eternally grateful for what happened. I will take it and I'm going. But there is going to be no doubt in Big's backyard, because there are boys and girls there running 100, Scott. So I will 100% be able to show what I
got. See exactly what you've got in the tank. And knowing you, Ned, you're going to absolutely bury yourself as well. Because I think this is one thing around ultra, and I think it happens at many different levels, but you've got people that can just gut it out. I mean, I think that you see a lot of time in races, and we all know people that do a race, and if they're not feeling on a race, they'll just, you know, DNF. And I've always prided myself. I've DNF'd. I've only ever DNF'd the Four Trails, which I've DNF'd twice.
That's legit though. That's okay.
I look back with regret. And the third one, I DNF'd in Doi UTMB, but I legitimately had a fractured hip that I was trying to run with. So I think I can pass that. But I've never pulled off anything less than, I've never pulled off myself, of course, in less than 100 miles. But you see people that go out and, oh, if they're not going the speed they want, or they're not going to, you know, hit the target time, and then they just go, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to DNF now. And I'm just like, just see it through, because you're going to learn so much. And even if you're not going to hit your target time, even if you're not going to hit your target place, doesn't matter. Just get it done. Just man up, woman up, just get it done. And I think that mental fortitude is what makes Biggs just the kind of, or like the Backyard Ultra, just kind of a different level. Because I think you talk about the balance between actually ability and strength and quality of running, and then the mental fortitude. And what's the balance of it? And it depends on, I suppose, if you're doing a 5K, obviously, you know, anyone can, it's less on the mental side. Obviously, there's a part of it at the very elite level. But then, and Biggs, I think it's just, it is, you know, there's, it's much more on the mental side. And I think you, Ned, have, especially of like the last 4 years of training for it, I think you've developed that mental fortitude for it.
I also think this is the greatest advantage of being an older guy.
Yeah.
Training,
it's
that
a leveler.
Brain, it is, because let's face it, I'm running 8 minutes per K, Scott. I mean, that's walking for you, right? Literally. And it is. But you've got to get rid of your ego. Scott, I mean, I was 47, I ran a 302 marathon. I used to be an 18-minute 5K guy. That's not winning anything, but it's not bad, right? It's a little bit of speed, you know?
Yeah.
And I was a 38-minute 10K guy. And I used to think people who ran 6 minute per K, I thought something was wrong with them. I thought, what's wrong with them? Why can't they actually run? Now I never break 6 minutes per K. And I think that's why you see Backyard. Harvey Lewis is 48, 49. In the American team, Jennifer Russo, she's 58. She just did 48. Yeah. Her best is 59. She's 58 and she can do 59 loops. So I do think this, you know, we have the odd one like Sam Harvey, who's super young, doing 100. But I think that mental fortitude is so much. And I agree with you about DNFing. Of course, if you've got a broken hip, you've got to be sensible. But there is, and one thing I'll say, you know, Backyard, one thing I'll pride myself on, Laz says, never die in the chair, ever. Never die in the chair, die on the course. And I all of my finishes have either been on the course, or all of my, I've timed out every time.
Ned, you'll be the third person we've had on the podcast that's actually been to Biggs. So we had Will Hayward on a couple of years ago representing Hong Kong.
He was
Kong
amazing.
As a Kiwi.
He got the assist at Biggs.
He got the assist, yeah. I think on that, it got to around 60 or so. And he it reminds me, you saying like you never die on the chair. He literally sort of like fell asleep running in the trail and fell asleep into a bush. But another absolute hero. Obviously, we had Joshua on after winning the previous one with Derek and now you as well, and both of them put in incredible performances in the US, and I think you're following in pretty strong footsteps there to go and perform.
Well, not to say the least, Scott, let's face it, so you had Will Hayward on, who was the assist to Maggie Guttrell, right? Yeah. And he went 60 something. We then have Joshua, who goes 72. Man, if I'm the third guy on, I mean, I'm certainly not getting an assist at Biggs, that's for sure.
There is, I mean, outside of Japan, because I think some of the Japan runners have done well at Biggs as well. And I mean, they're still going strong as like fourth. There's still four runners there now. But I think that you have an opportunity. I think that's the target for you, to see if you can beat Joshua's time from last year.
So I would have said, Scott, I would have said, Scott, honestly, I just never thought I could get there. But a couple of things have changed. So I have a bad habit of eating crap, cakes, sweets, ice cream. I stopped for 3 months. So people said, you said I look lean. A lot of people mentioned it. So yeah, I dropped like 6 kilos. How? Just because I stopped eating shit, cake, sweets, ice cream, ate clean. And I, after 26 loops, like I really thought in my head, I can go to 40 something here in the heat. So I'll just say it, because I think if you see on LinkedIn, I post a lot of stuff. I always believe in saying my goals out loud. So I always do. I'm, you know, minimum 48 at Biggs. Flat minimum 48, target goal. Joshua 72 seems all the way out there, to be honest. That just seems incredible. But minimum straight up target 48. And then let's see what happens.
Yeah, it's a solid target. I mean, interesting that one. I've got a slightly different perception around setting goals, or I've heard a different philosophy around it, and I'll just run it by you.
Go for it.
Of sometimes, and for some people, and I suppose this is just for certain people, when they say, "Oh, I'm going to go and run Singapore Marathon next year," and or it's coming up in the next couple of weeks, but I'm going to run next year's one. And people say, "Oh, great, that's awesome. Yeah, good job." Like, and people get that kind of self feeling of like, oh, they've a sense of achievement just by saying they're going to do something. And so that in itself makes them feel that they've achieved something, they've really done nothing. And so I actually used to have this policy where I used to actually write my goals into an envelope and just keep it for myself and like for the next year. I haven't done it in the last couple of years, but and would sort of keep it to like hold myself accountable. Or there's another way of looking at it, of saying like, I'm going to train for the Singapore Marathon next year, and then knowing exactly what you've got to put in and what you've got to do to be able to get there. But I just think for some people, it can be saying they're going to do something is almost feeling like I've actually
Yes.
done it in some respects.
Oh, Scott, like we could go on a whole riff here. When I was in Hong Kong 20 years ago, when you entered the marathon, they posted you the medal because they didn't want to hand it out at the end. So you could enter the marathon and get a medal. I was like, and this dude who used to sit next to me, he was sick on the day, didn't do it, and he kept the medal on his desk. And I was like,
Yeah,
absolutely
terrible.
not,
Cannot be
absolutely
allowed.
not.
Yeah.
Cannot. But on the other side, so I don't know if you know of a philosopher, a running philosopher, one of the greats. It's called George Sheehan. So if you look at him, he's called George Sheehan, and he's one of the great philosophers about running. He runs, and he wrote a fantastic article about this, Scott. And he said, so your point is right. Goals are all different. You can put them in an envelope. You can say them on LinkedIn. You can do whatever you like. It's all everyone. But he said, do not reach for what you can. Reach for what you cannot. So I put my goals for Backyard as 300K, run till Tuesday, and the last person standing. All of those seemed way beyond me. I didn't think I could run 300K. I didn't think I'd get to Tuesday. And I thought, I did not think I'd beat Joshua. So for me, again, I think it's all your own personal way. I agree. Just saying you'll do a marathon, I don't think that makes sense. I think you've got to say a goal that you can't get. So if I'd said to somebody, I'm going to do Backyard and I'm going to do 100K, well, that's silly because I can do 100K because I know I can. Even 100 miles, like in my head, oh, and I told myself and I told Darren, my crew, you know, it's what Laz says. 24 loops is the entry price to the race. That's the actual price. So 24 loops, and I told myself, Scott, and here's my shirt strategy. So I told myself 24 is entry price. No, that's not the race. That's just the
It's just
ticket.
getting started. Yeah, it's
Not even
getting to
get
the start line.
getting started. So I had a strategy. You know, I've got an array of rabbit shirts. So for the first, I had four shirts with me. The first 6 hours, I wore a Hawaiian shirt. Because it was meant to take it easy. First 6 hours, take it easy. The second 6 hours, I wore my donut shirt, and that was to remind me to get calories in. The third 6 hours, I wore my plaid, so my plaid checked rabbit running shirt, because it's time to work. Just buckle down. And my last shirt, Marcus, my dear friend and Lekka owner, he'd been at Western States, and he had got me a Western States championship shirt and put my initials on the arm. And it was an orange Western State shirt. And I wore it on the last 6 hours because it was
I
a
was there
champ.
when he gave it to you. We caught up for a
That's
coffee that
right.
time, and he
That's
was like,
right.
and I was like, that is a sick
Yeah.
gift.
And that's right. And so, and in my head, I'm like, okay. And that's because this is championship time. And I told myself, I'm going to go through that twice. So I'm going to wear them all. And my crew, you ready for this, Darren? So
He
here I
washed them all for you.
he washed them all in the bathroom for me, ready to go all again.
Mate, top crew. Honestly, what a legend Darren is as well. Honestly, Ned, great performance, mate. I think, I think actually keeping some in the tank is a good thing. Now you've got another year to be able to sort of carry on plodding those miles, keeping those kgs off, and keeping that mentality. And I think that we're going to have another epic performance, like Will Hayward and Joshua from the last time. And hopefully you'll see my friend Trung there as well. Trung's
Of
an
course.
absolute legend. He just finished tour as well the other day, Tour de Jean.
Wow.
He was out there for quite a while, but he's also like done Rinjani Mila as well. I think he's one of the only like five people to have finished that as well. Great lad, and I think you'll be seeing him as a finish the start line. along with a whole array of superstars that I'm sure I can just see you being just starstruck at that start line and taking selfies with everyone.
And Scott, I am I'm a fanboy. Like, I love it. Like, I'm a complete fanboy. Some people are like, oh, I'm not really bothered by it. And let's face it, these are not famous people in the big world. Like, I don't give a crap about Ronaldo or other famous, good on them, I'm sure they're good people. But, you know, give me Laz, Harvey Lewis, all of these guys every time. And just, I think for me, you know, honestly, those couple of tears after Joshua sent me on my way is like, look, I love Ultra. And this feels like, you know what I wrote on LinkedIn before the race started? I wrote, this is Christmas Day for me, right? Because this is what I love. And I wrote that down, and it feels like at the end, Laz was Santa and came and gave me the present of the little ticket. And I'm like, oh, holy shit, let's go.
Brilliant. Just one last thing I wanted to touch on with you. Obviously, there's lots of has happened in the endurance world, but one that's, I think, quite kind of linked to backyard is Ned Brockman down in Australia. I don't know if you saw, he just went for the 100-mile record, which I think the prior record was...
No, 1,000.
1,000 miles, sorry. The 1,000-mile record, which I think the previous record was like 10 hours, 10 and a half
10
hours.
Days. Since he was 10 and a half days.
10 and a half days. God, my brain is not working now. 10 and a half days. And so he was going for that Guinness World Record, right? And I've just seen some of the footage of how much he absolutely just ruined himself. But he's still, this is like classic example of like powering on through rather than DNF. I think almost taken to the David Goggins stage of like he's like maybe pushing it a bit too far. But he completed in 12 and a half days with what looked like a really badly swollen ankle, like bad shoulder, was throwing up, he looked in a complete, but were you following it?
Of course. I mean, his famous run across Australia before, he's the archetype Australian. So I'm called Ned, he's called Ned. I was named after Ned Kelly, the original train robber in Australia in 1880, because I had a square head and he wore a tin helmet. I don't know why. And Ned Brockman has got 2 Ds, so he's N-E-double-D. But look, I think he's the archetypal Australian. He has the mullet. He's a young guy. Good dude, great on Insta, a bit like, the hardest geezer when he ran across Africa. He appealed to the zeitgeist of the populace. But his track effort is fantastic. I mean, running around a track is disastrous for your body because there's no change, it's rotation, it's terrible. I followed it, love to see it. He does great. He raised $2.5 million, Scott, for homelessness and mental health charity. Homeless, $2.5 million, and the dude's like 20 something. When I was 20 something, I was goofing off, man. This dude's cracking out 1,000 miles. So 100% followed it, thought it was amazing. So good to see. And I think running's having its special moment, man. Like this 10 years, 20 years running, I think COVID, as much as we all hated the lockdown, gave running an extra boost. And the storytelling you can do on social, what people like Ned Brockman are doing. I mean, I think our sport is its glory time, man. So cool to see him do that.
Yeah, it was an amazing performance, and I think really captured the imagination. And I think, as you say, that the amount raised for charity, I think if you're going to raise for charity, you need to do something that is just completely out there. And obviously with Natalie Dow's effort from the Project 1000 from Thailand to Singapore, and she's starting another one in Philippines as well. So she's got another one coming up, isn't she? But yeah, there's some... And we do an awards every year, and we always do recognize a charity event as well. I think it would be hard to look past that one, just the amount you put in to get it done as well. But Ned, any other call outs? You mentioned, mentioned Lekka, you've been working with for quite a while. Obviously, you've got your own podcast as well that you do with the team there.
I appreciate it. The biggest shout out, Jerry Chua. Jerry, you're a legend. Yeah. You put on this race, you've been the cornerstone of running here. You've just opened a new shop as well, and you put this on every time. Love it. And obviously everyone out there in the backyard, on the trails, all of it, and of course to the big man Laz himself. But this is no mean feat, putting on an event like this. So shout out to everybody. But Jerry, thank you for putting this on.
Well worthy call out. She is the matron. She is the stalwart of the ultra running community here in Singapore. And yeah, big shout out for putting on the event. I think she was probably happy to see you to see Joshua give up at 25. It saved her like another day of not sleeping. But Ned, always a pleasure to catch up, mate. Thanks so much for coming on, and yeah, look forward to seeing you out on the trails roads again soon.
Absolutely, Scott. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. Good work. We'll see you soon.
Tell the truthful story if they ever ask. Stop the complaining because things ain't that bad.